Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. Gosh, the training.
Yes, I...
This is going to be a fairly fast-paced morning. The room that we're in is the Government Advisory Committee, the GAC. They have a very heavy agenda, and they've asked if we could kindly move out a little bit early today. We're going to do our very best, but also giving full courtesy to our chairs who have come to talk with us. So we're going to have a bit of a balance. The first thing I'd like to say, though, is please, if you haven't gotten your headsets, please do so at the door, in courtesy to those who are speaking in any one of our four languages. I would like everyone to try to come and settle in as Rafiq Damak begins to talk with you a bit about the non-commercial stakeholder group. Again, we're backing up every day to make sure that, as the alumni say, we connect the dots. So the generic name supporting organization, the GNSO, the policy arm of ICANN, has contracted and non-contracted parties. The non-contracted parties include the non-commercial stakeholder group, which is made up of the non-commercial user constituency and the not-for-profit organizational concerns constituency. Both will be here to speak today, one after the next, or pretty close to be. So Rafiq is going to further explain to you this dynamic and relationship and the work that they do.
Okay, good morning. Thanks for coming too early for this kind of meeting. So, thank Janice for this introduction. So, the non-commercial stakeholder group, the non-commercial means that we have no commercial interest on what's about the domain industry, so we represent user and registrant, whatever they are, individual or organization, and so we have several individual and organization. We have now around more than 500 members all over the world. And so because the setting in the GNSO, we are really the kind of only civil society place within ICANN. I think you heard about the ALAC, but ALAC because it includes the business and also non-business user there. So we focus mostly on generic name policy, and this is really one of the main important policy done within ICANN. And you see that's why there was a lot of, and there is still a lot of interest about the new GTLD program. Our group, because it's diverse, in terms of gender, in terms of geographical diversity, we have members from all regions, but also the diversity of background and point of view. So when we handle issues within the GNSO, we have many times kind of hot debates and discussion, and we try to make consensus on this decision. In terms of, as again, membership, we are quite open. So we are one of the rare structures that accept individuals. So even if you are a member of an organization, it can be sometimes more easy to join as individual. So, and I'm not going to talk about the application process. It's in our website, ncsg.is. It's quite easy. And you will find the application form. And if you you want more information about the process and so on, you can contact me directly, and I will be happy to respond. In terms of issues, since it's about generic names, I mean, it's about the DNS industry, and we care about the registrant and user aspect and point of view. And we care a lot about human rights issues. So maybe people don't see the connection, what's the relation between domain and, for example, freedom of expression, but there is a lot. Because if you buy a domain name and you are an activist and you want some protection, when you buy a domain name and use it. You don't want that your personal information to be disclosed through the Whois, which is the server that you can find all personal information about the domain name owner. And we are kind of advocating about the protection, so you cannot disclose all this information in public, and you need a due process if you need to access, for example, for law enforcement agency. So this is also the part about the privacy issue. On the other side, we also care about development issues. So we are talking about domain name industry. We had the concern at the time that there was no enough applicant from developing countries to get GTLD and to become registry. And we pushed for the creation of working group to make a series of recommendation to make it more accessible from those from developing country, providing them support, financial support, and in-kind support, like about the legal. Because we need to be frank here that the process for an EGTD program, it's complicated. Legally, it's not easy to even to understand the process. And it's more really for those, the incumbent from the registry world. So we advocated there, and we pushed it to get a lot of recommendation. It was not really successful, but we made the point, and we are still keep pushing for that. There is also that we want to have more registrar, the seller, that retailer, that you from where you can buy a domain name. We need more in developing countries. So we have a broad range of issues that we care about. It's how I can kind of behave. So that's why we get people involved on the IANA stewardship transition and ICANN accountability, because from our experience, we see really several issues within ICANN accountability, and that in many times they try to bypass the policy process. And it's quite important. It's not just about the process, because when you are a group like us, we are not we don't have the same funding. We don't have funding like other group when they have financial interest in the main industry. So it's important to keep the process, because that protects you and us in this city. Today we will have our meeting, so I invite you to come. We'll have first at 2 p.m. our members' meeting. It's around two hours and a half. We'll get several guests, so it will be an interesting discussion that you can observe. It's open meeting. You are welcome. As structure, we are really quite open, public archive, everything open, maybe too much open compared to other groups. And after that, we'll have the meeting with the board, and usually it's quite funny because we are more questioning the board, and but we are trying to have some interaction to get their feedback, but also that we give them our vision and to explain why we see what our point of view on several issues. Okay, maybe if you can start QA here, and just maybe to go deeply in some issues.
So if anyone has any questions, this is the time to ask. And a couple of things that Rafiq said I think are so important, and one of them is the fact about each group in the multi-stakeholder model. You know, I said about we're all talking the same thing, but from a different point of view, maybe. He said how important it was to remain understanding about the structure and the policy and the process. So talking about IANA transition, again, you would think, okay, civil society, policy, why are we talking about this? Yesterday, same question, intellectual property. Why would you be interested, right? And I thought you said it very well. You know, there are policy points in this, you know, things that you have to focus on. And so it's a big job. And, yes, they're not getting paid to do this job. It's all volunteer. We're normal people doing the work of heroes. Because it is about global internet policy and how it's going to move forward. But I really appreciated the way that you pointed that out, because I think it's very important. We understand it's all of the multi-stakeholder groups have a stake, right?
Yeah, I mean, different groups, they have different interests. If you are a contracted party, you are making money from this. So they have strong interest in on the policy. But even in the non-contracted party, if you are the intellectual property, they are making a lot of money from this. And they have interest in how to make the process. But for us, non-commercial, we really care is more about protecting the user, the registrant, I mean, organization. And because we don't have financial interest. I mean, we are using DNS in part of something else. So we have to fight sometimes, many times, with other groups. But we need to live with them and to find some consensus. And this is how the multi-stakeholder groups. I mean, I'm not going to give you like it's kind of wonderful image of multi-stakeholder model. When it's come to the policy making, it can be really, really bad. Because you have to fight, you have to defend your ideas, your opinions, and we are not, I mean, it's one of the challenges to bring people to get involved and takes time. I mean, I'm doing this in my free time, sometimes in my holidays. Living in Japan, the calls are really a non-humanly times. But it's okay at the end because I have interest to participate. I feel doing something there. What we end up as a result, that's another issue. But that's the point. If you are here, so you want to advocate something, you want to do something. And so you need to find your focus, what you want to achieve here. And nobody will respond to this question except you. So this is the question you have to ask yourself. When you come to ICANN, you can join or not any group, but what you want to achieve, what you want to defend. Do you want to represent user of your country? Do you want to represent a specific point of view? I mean, we have people like coming from developing country, for example, about dynasty worship. Some of them, they have concern about the jurisdiction issue that even after the transition, it will ICANN will still be headquartered in U.S. Others don't think so because they have more concern that we need to separate between the ICANN and the IANA function. And ensuring the separability is to ensure a lot of accountability there. So we have that diversity and we try to find the consensus. Is not an easy task, but we have to live with that. So maybe we can get questions that will be much more. Yes. Yes, Renata.
Yeah, you talked about diversity, how diverse...
Can we do better than I did, Renata, and give your name?
Yes, yeah, sorry. Renata Aquino Ribeiro from Brazil. Told us about the non-commercial stakeholder group and its diversity.
Yeah.
But I have been wondering in relationship to regional diversity, because I would imagine that impacts like a human rights issue, yeah, and its debate. So how does that work?
Yeah, okay. First, the diversity is kind of requirement in our charter. As a group, in part of GNSO, we elect 6 people. And so we have a requirement that no more than 2 people from the same region. So we have to figure out how we get people from the different region. So we have, for example, someone from Brazil, someone from Canada, United States, someone from Egypt, someone from Australia, and I forget for the other one. Okay, we have 6. Myself, I'm coming from Tunisia. And if you see, I mean, you can see for the chairs how many are not from Europe or North America. So we have that requirement. And also because we have a diverse membership. So that's sometimes more easy compared to other groups. About diversity of opinion, if I take human rights, the people like from North America, for example, they care a lot about freedom of expression. They have that vision of the First Amendment in the United States. Those from Europe, they care a lot about privacy. The division of privacy can differ with those from United States. Many people from developing countries, they care a lot about social and political rights. So that's why, for example, when we talk about the new GDPR and for .Amazon, we have different point of view how to care about that. Some people there have more legalistic view. They say, okay, Amazon have the right, not Amazon. Other, they say, no, I mean, you have the indigenous rights and so on. So that diversity comes from. We are not really monolithic. We are really diverse. So we have to work out to find a kind of common ground here. And that's appear, as I explained, for example, in a stewardship transition, many like people from Brazil, they express that opinion about jurisdiction issue, and they said that in mailing list, in many for our mailing list, I mean. So this is the kind of diversity. It's come from geographical diversity, but also the background. We have academia, we have activists, we have just user. So they have their different vision of how we should do things. Yes, Nadira. Nadira from Palestine.
Nadira from the Internet Society of Palestine chapter. Being involved, that's as a newcomer, the first time I hear about the group, just also wanted to ask, do you also manage the, as a civil society, non-commercial group, are you allowed or you been given to manage some domain names?
No, I mean, it will be a kind of big conflict of interest because it's not commercial. And one of the requirements, you cannot be part of two stakeholder group within GNSO, because it's also about voting. You will game the system. So if someone want to be, I mean, he was with us and he want to be as a new, I mean, applicant for GTLD, he will leave and he will go to other structure. I mean, we cannot, I mean, you cannot be in two sides. It's real big, huge conflict of interest here. So we don't...
But it's also far, because as end user, I want to choose a name which is also, if you are, that's from my point of view, because I don't know what the group, the group does in managing those. So there is allocated domain names which has worked for non-commercial, non-for-profit, isn't it?
I'm not sure to understand well. I mean, you are talking about TLD, like .com or...
So do you have...
I mean, it's a business, so you will be a registry. You mean if you have kind of a second name to manage? Not really. What we can do, it's more to encourage about competition. That's one of maybe point of view within the group, and when the new GTLD program, to have it too, is to have more competition. If you offer more TLD, it's, you have more chance to buy, to get access to domain name, whatever, it's an IDN, it means internationalized domain name or other.
So you have a certain allotment of domain names that
no.
you manage?
No, we don't have. I mean,
you don't have? That's why I'm trying to understand more the group. Yeah. So I thought you...
It's more you are a registrant, for example, and you are concerned about the policy that it will impact you because you have some domain name that you are using for your own, I don't know, I mean, for family purpose or whatever. So, yeah.
So I am now taxi.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Antonio Alberti from Brazil. You mentioned that technology always left some trace of who is using a domain name. What actions do you do for guaranteeing privacy?
Okay. The who is a big mess as a policy within ICANN. It's under discussion for many years, even before I joined ICANN. So what's happened is, in particular for TLD, and sometimes it's depending which TLD you buy, not all of them have this, sometimes the same policy. What we call the legacy, and like, for example, the new GTLD, they don't have necessarily the same policy. If you check, if you have internet access, just check in Whois service for any domain, you will see several information, because Whois was created to provide a point of contact. For example, I try to access a website, I find a problem, I can contact the owner. That was the purpose. The issue is that when it used it for different purpose, like intellectual property, for example, let's say I buy Amazon Saks.com, and representative of Amazon are not happy. They will try to use, I mean, system to kind of take that process, and take that domain. This is not necessarily going to work, but it's also create a lot of kind of pressure, a threat, if you are just a registrant and you receive some legal letter or something. But another point, if you are, for example, an activist, you are from Brazil, an activist, and you buy a domain to criticize Dilma Rousseff, for example. You don't want your personal information to be disclosed, so you want to keep it safe. You can use some what we call a proxy and the privacy service. That's paid service provided by the registrar, who are the retailers for domain name. You can buy that service. And you protect your information. When someone tries to access, he's not going to see your information. Sometimes law enforcement agency like police, they can try to access. What we are telling them here, you cannot just, without due process or without court order, you need to go through that. And so we need to create a protection to not allow everyone to access to those information. So there are different cases here. I mean, you will hear a lot of many people say, you know, about cybercrime, and we need to, yes, the cybercrime is a reality, but doesn't mean that you have to threat the rights of everyone about privacy. You need to ensure a process, procedure, and due process to protect everyone's rights here. So that's our point of view. So it's how we create the balance here. So there are several policies about who is. One of them, for example, about this proxy and the privacy service, we need to make to protect that, because if you are an activist or you are an NGO and some authoritarian regime, you need a protection. So, is it clear? Yes.
Hi, my name is Fabrício.
Soy Fabrício Pessoa de Brasil. Este tema es muy interesante porque trabajamos con el ciberdelito, es algo que enfrentamos. Lo que quería mencionar es algo distinto. He ido a muchos eventos.
Privacy, it's a big thing, you know, it's just the thing that everybody wants to discuss and everybody talks about. But what I've seen is that there are lots of different groups defending different points of view as if they were talking for the people. But when you talk about the end user has no idea of how internet works.
Yes.
So how can we have someone to tell them what they think people want? My main thing is that there is a big conflict between security and privacy, and that's when people are talking about, and so what can be done, what cannot be done. But what I feel is that actually people are trying to decide something for the people while people don't know how it works. People should be telling, maybe someone is willing to give up part of their privacy for their security. So how do you deal with this issue if it is something that you guys discuss here at ICANN?
Yeah, I mean, I understand. This big issue is how you can say you are representing. That's a challenge for any organization. It's not just for us, even your own organization. It's how you can speak up for all Brazilian users. So you need to create kind of, first, to maybe to grow your membership, to have a diversity. Also to go outside, to liaise with other organizations outside. If there is some topic that we need you guys to help us. About security and human rights in general, not just privacy. You need a balance. Personally, I am involved in other space about the cybersecurity. And one of the ideas, you have to create a balance here. And when you do, you are talking about cybersecurity, you need the human rights dimension. And we see the issue with the surveillance and so on. So it's how to find that. It's not really to kind of lose some of your rights here. It's just you create a process. If it's about cybercrime, we need a due process. I mean, I think if there is concern, law enforcement agency can access, but they need to follow the process. What's happened many times, they try to access without, and that's put you at risk. I don't know what kind of law enforcement can, from authoritarian regime. Do you think it's good that they can access to personal information like that? I mean, there is a lot of risk. So it's how we create the balance, is to how to ensure that you process. I don't think you need to lose your rights here. So, again, I lost my thought. So, yeah. In it's also the privacy have a different interpretation from different country. United States, they don't see the privacy like many in Europe. Europe has much more, in terms of legislation, a high bar about privacy and data protection. And so it's one of the issues we have is in ICANN when they made, like, for example, the registrar accreditation agreement, they made a lot of, like what they call validation and verification of information, and also data retention. They find out later that it's not possible within European Union jurisdiction. So this kind of thing you have to figure out when you do policy and to ensure the protection of users at the end. Still, the presentation is big problem. That's why you have to grow up your membership, you have to liaise with others, and nobody can pretend that he represents all users. I didn't say that, and I won't.
No, just complimenting. Yeah, my question is, it was more just to know if you guys work as well something towards user awareness, so that we can people represent themselves, that's...
We are trying. It's not easy, because you have two things. We are doing policy in ICANN. Advocacy is a different thing, and it needs more resources and also different types. We are trying to do this when we liaise more with a specialized group. For example, we have a meeting in London, a session in London meeting about privacy, like more than 3 hours, and we get people from like Privacy International. Privacy International, as an organization, they are doing only privacy. And we try to get them and to share what is happening here in terms of policy, and we told them we need your help, guys, to spread the word and so on. So we are trying to do that. We have this person, please.
Hola. Buenos días, Eduardo Rojas de Bolivia.
Eduardo Rojas from Bolivia. I would be interested, Eduardo Rojas from Bolivia, I would be interested in finding out how you consider the participation of the governments in the group. I understand that governments can become non-commercial players, and their standpoint on the defense of privacy, freedom of expression, protection of childhood, fighting organized crime online can be relevant and also take the global model to the national model. A number of subjects have been discussed that are directly related to the possibility of invasion of privacy or personal protection as to data. What is the dialogue mechanism created by the group to national arenas? I can imagine that this type of decision can also create a new look of the governments of the states in their capacity as non-commercial users.
We need to have clarification here. Government cannot join us as non-commercial because we have specific, it's really about user and so on. Government, they have their own space within the GAC where they can participate in making advice, giving advice to the board about a broad range of topics. So we don't accept the government representative within our group. However, we can work with some government on some issue when we find the support from them about specific topics like human rights or privacy, we can work with them. And we can also, we do a lot of kind of awareness. We discuss with GAC representative about some issue and explain our point of view, and we tell them why, for example, they should not take such position. Okay, why they should not take such position and so on. They cannot really be non-commercial. Government has a different role and so on. So we liaise with them, but they are not part of our group. Okay? Yes, okay.
Perdón, es la pregunta.
From the floor. What are the dialogue mechanisms that the group could create with the governments? I understand that it is a different kind of player, but the defense of privacy, freedom of expression, are decisions that in the national arena or local places are directly associated to states. If there is a dialogue mechanism, it's not a representation issue, but how protection policies articulate with the group or are disseminated to the group. Brazil had a major role when it protected Amazon.com, the generic name of Amazonia, same thing with Patagonia, same thing with La Paz. In my country, there is the La Paz city name, and it means peace. And so you can infer that it's talking about world peace. So these dialogues have to be such that there is clarity in what is defended as non-commercial group. And governments don't trade domain names. And from the civil society, by creating a dialogue, fresher, newer mechanisms could be created to respect privacy, human rights, and so on.
As government, they are supposed to defend the rights and to respect international law. But if you see sometimes what the GAC position, and I try, not sometimes, I mean respecting international law, there is a lot of concerns. However, we try to discuss with them. It's not easy because how the GAC itself function. It's they are doing most of their work with during ICANN meetings when a lot of things happen between meetings. So we try to reach them, and it's not just us. I think the GENASO itself is trying to improve the process, the dialogue with the GAC, to tell them about ongoing policy at early stage and to get their input. So it's something ongoing. We are trying to work with them, some of them, not necessarily. It's not easy task, you know, but yeah. In multi-stakeholder model, you have to work in the different stakeholders and to build alliance. So, okay, maybe you can, yes. Yeah.
This will have to be our last question, and
sure.
Then if anyone needs to speak to Rafiq, they can walk with him to the...
We can go there, yeah.
It's a short one. I'm Ignacio from Argentina, Ignacio Estrada from Argentina. Regarding Juiz, I would like to know if there's any open group discussing on the default of Juiz, because right now there's a business created around, because... on a default, your data is shown. So is there any discussion on this?
I think it's quite important too. I think many users are not really aware about this issue. Sometimes they discover that who is information somehow. But other more aware, sometimes they buy the proxy service, which means that you third party will protect you, so when you see the Whois, you will find like their contact, but not yours. It's kind of protection. Yeah, but it's something is how maybe more awareness. People should be aware about this when you buy a domain. Many of them are not really informed about that. And also how you can ensure protection. But also the problem is the Whois itself is changing because what they with the new GDPR program, they are pushing for a different model, that more information. And also, you will hear about it. So the outcome of the expert working group. It's kind of an ad hoc basis group that they suggested that we aggregate all who is information in one place and to give access and so on. It's really big problem that we see here. It's risky in terms of security. It's also, it can be a tool for surveillance. So I just think that you are, because for now, not all who is are in the same place. Depends to the registry and so on. Just a registrar. Just think that you aggregate all of them in one place. That's of hundreds of millions of people information that can be accessible. Even the model they are talking about, how you give access, is not efficient. That's kind of discussions happening, and we have strong point of view against it. So.
Rafiq, thank you so very much. One thing.
Okay. No, just one. Yeah, thanks. Okay. I tried to explain as well. I'm not sure that I explained everything. I'm happy to explain later, but also during the meeting and so on. And you can ask Janice from my contact and so on. I'm happy to answer your question. I mean, if you are an activist from civil society, you are welcome to join us, and as individual or as an organization. It's not necessarily usually constituency, because it's stakeholder group. It's the structure that when we can create other maybe groups and so on. But that's a different discussion. I can explain later. Okay.
Thank you, and I'll give a little plug. Rafiq, I think you've heard this now. It's going to have a more intimate setting tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock up by the ICANN information booth. So you'll be able to think of some other questions and be able to talk with him in an intimate setting without translation. But but it will be. Thank you, Rafiq. And again, if you had a lingering question, please feel free to walk over to him over here to the side and ask the question while we bring Rudy up to the floor. Good morning, sir.
Morning. Wow, what an audience. I'm impressed, so many faces. What an audience.
I know.
You're working very hard, Janice.
I am.
A little bit too. Thank you to allow me to have a chat with you about our structure, what we are doing. But my goal is essentially to listen to you, because I want to know what your problems are, what your issues are. And that's why we are talking about not-for-profit operational concerns for NGOs. I think that many of you are involved in NGOs. Who is in part of an NGO here? Raise your hand.
Does everybody understand what that is?
Yeah, good question, Janice. It seems that NGO is not well known in some regions also. I know that in the Asian region, that's not the culture. So an NGO is a not-for-profit organization, quite often also called civil society. So it's essentially an organization that is working for the community. It can also work for a little bit more commercial activities, but in essence, it's all about not-for-profit. So those that are part of the NGOs, you're absolutely welcome in our community. Our goal for the upcoming year, fiscal year 16, will essentially go to help NGOs getting really involved in internet governance. And to be able to be involved, you need to know what the DNS at least is. You need to know what the domain name system is. And what we discovered during a survey that we did in Europe on the United Nations ECOSOC list, we discovered a big issue. About 1,500 NGOs have been addressed with the question to participate in a survey with very simple questions, only 5 questions. And when we send out the first mail to these NGOs, 60% bounced, came back, non-delivered. And we were surprised. We thought Europe should be a well-educated region, should know what an email is, what a domain name is, but it isn't. It is really a big issue. We have been calling about 500 NGOs to understand why the mail was coming back. And one of the, let's say, normal activities in NGOs is that most of the work is done by volunteers. And in periods where there is an economic crisis, the first priority that we all have is having a good income, having a good revenue, so that we can manage our our being, that we can manage our family. And for that reason, most often, volunteers step down and try to find a good job and do first that work. And if there is time free, they will probably get engaged again. And that's the reason why we are losing, or the NGOs are losing contact with the outside world, because the email address is not working anymore. The person just stepped away. That's one of the issues we discovered. But the most frightening one is that we discovered that many NGOs lost their domain name. And also there we tried to figure out why. And again, a big surprise. Most of the NGOs didn't know that they had to renew every year their domain name. They thought, well, we bought it, it's ours. And it isn't. So you see, there is a lot of work that has to be done to enable NGOs to understand internet governance, because they didn't even know that they need to renew their domain name. So one of our activities in the upcoming months is try to identify how we can help NGOs in understanding the use of a domain name. And we have a special program that we have been elaborating. It's called the Pathfinder. Pathfinder, the name says itself. Find your way in all this misery. And we are going to try to help NGOs in doing educational programs, creating awareness, going around in the NGOs across the regions. And that's already a first point where I'm looking at you all, because you are the voices of these regions, you're the voices of these NGOs. So it's important that we can speak to you and we can listen to your questions and help you to better understand what's going on. Another item that we have on our agenda, and that's where you will see, and some people are a bit surprised that we are sitting together with the intellectual property community and business, but there is a reason for that. It's quite simple. You all know social media, Facebook. Who doesn't know Facebook? I think it's easier. Okay, fine, so everybody knows what Facebook is. Well, as an NGO, and even as an individual, you need to understand when you put your content on Facebook, you're giving it away. You're no longer the owner of that content. And that's painful for NGOs, because your content, the content of NGOs, has a huge value. And if you put it on Facebook, everybody can use it and take profit of it. So in order to keep the ownership, to keep your intellectual property, you need to have an own website, an own domain name. And you see, I'm coming back to the first element. Having a domain name is the biggest value that you can get as an NGO, because the price of a domain name is cheap. It's not a barrier. And that's where it starts. And there is also the point that people from the intellectual property community are going to help us also to give you a better understanding of the need of this, so that you can keep your own values with your organization and you can get funding. When you put it on Facebook, anybody else can ask for funding because it has no ownership anymore. So you see, these are the elements on which we are trying to work to get NGOs understanding how the DNS operates and what the value is. And then we can get the NGOs involved in internet governance. We also learned our children how to walk and how to speak before they can really do. Well, it's a bit similar to that process. We need to learn you what it means, what it is needed for, and then you can also participate in the discussions of, for instance, the whois. What's the value of whois for your organization? Well, it's your business card at the end. Most often it's forgotten, but it's your business card. It gives the contact elements to your organization. And it's for free because you have to fill it in when you register for the domain name. So I try to make the picture of what means operational concerns. It's all about the use of a domain name. And then we start discussing about the policy. Then we discuss about the use of privacy issues in the domain name space, in the Whois. And then you get involved in the operations itself. And that's what we are essentially trying to do also in the MCSG community and in the GNSO, to participate in the working groups and raise the voice of NGOs with the criteria they have. We all know human rights is indeed a big, big and hot topic. But for NGOs, that's not the first priority. The NGO rights are the first priority. So we need to put together, merge the two issues so that we speak with two voices, one on the human rights, one on the NGO rights. Because it is needed. And just to take the sample and close my speech, I'm coming from Belgium. And in Belgium, 40% in the Flanders region, 40% of the employment is given and offered by the not-for-profit organizations, the NGOs. Because in Belgium we have no products at all. We are specialists in delivering services, but also services to our community, social security and so on, medical services. So that's where we are finding at least 40% of employment. Imagine if we took that away. Belgium would no longer exist. We would crash just like Greece. So you see why NGOs are so important. And I think in the future it's going to be more important than today, because services are becoming quite important for everybody. And everybody can have access thanks to internet. So I will stop there just to give you a quick overview of NPOC itself. It's the youngest constituency in ICANN. It's still a very young baby, can just walk, sometimes falls off the steps, and then we have to take it up again. I'm happy that I'm finishing my first year mandate as the chair, because previously, or previous chairs, for several reasons, were not able to finish that term, and there was also a difficulty. You have no continuity. And for the upcoming year, aside one person, it will be the same team. So we are going to implement the strategy that we have been working on in this year and try to move really forward. And I'm looking at all of you, because we have a lot of spaces, a lot of functions to fill in. We want to elaborate our program committee, which was a few people this year. I want at least two persons from each region participating in the program committee. Come up with what's going on in your region. Bring up the problems in the region so that in the program committee we can elaborate a plan and try to find the best policies to help the regions. For us, that's priority number one. So please come up this afternoon at 9:30 we start our constituency day. It's in Retiro A, just above here. You're all welcome, and you're welcome around the table to discuss with us. It's not us just giving big shows. We want your voices. We want to hear from you. And I already recognize a few people in the room here that have been participating in previous sessions. Alexander is one of them. And I see also other people in the back. We are also recruiting from the fellowship. I saw Martin, but I was asking him to come and join us also. Martin Pablo Silva Valent, to have the full name, who is Argentina. He is now the secretary of NPOC. So you see, I want to retire, but I need you to come up and help me so that I can retire. I've already spent 10 years in ICANN, so I think it's enough. It's enough. Let the youngsters come. Let you come. Please. So that I can sit in the background. Maybe have being a fellow, a veteran fellow, and sit over there, and you sitting here and explain what NPOC is. So, if you have questions, please ask.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, my name is Raime Citerio, fellow. Vengo de Venezuela, soy miembro de NPOC.
I come from Venezuela, I'm a member of NPOC. My question is twofold. First, as a new member in Latin America, many NGOs think that this part of ICANN does not represent them appropriately. I think it's a matter of perception. The second part of my question is the following. How can we promote further involvement of NGOs in Latin America? Because there are many in different respects. Thank you.
Very good questions, indeed. And as I said, that's why we need people from each region to know what is important. If we just say, okay, we know what's going on, then we are on the wrong path. That's not the good idea. To answer your first question, it is indeed a wrong perception, but it's also due, I think, to the fact that we need to do more work as NPOC. We need to stand more. We have to be more on the stages so that people see that NGOs are there. But as you know, it's difficult to get NGOs involved because you don't have the resources to come to ICANN meetings. And luckily that the fellowship program exists. Otherwise, we would probably have almost no NGOs present here. So it's important that this program can continue and get more support. To the second question, we know that for a long while there has been a debate on what is internet governance for NGOs, for instance. Now we have the IGFs, and also there we have seen. I was recently in Geneva for the WISIS, and I discovered that almost no NGOs were present. Again, you have to go on your own expenses. Not cheap. Geneva, Switzerland, it's not a country where you can easily step forward and go to, because it's quite expensive staying there in a hotel too. So it's the. But what we consider is the issue of how to lower the burden so that you can easily step in. And I think we have to do that in two ways. We need first to enable you to talk to us. And we need to use every platform possible, and we're sitting together with ICANN in that context to try to elaborate tools that allows you to participate. I'm invited at 1 o'clock at the Next Generation meeting, because yesterday I mentioned in the panel that I would like to have some of the funds of the auction for students, for youngsters, to enable them to just like you, join the team and bring up what they think the internet governance is going to be. I can't tell, because maybe in 10 years I will have grass on my body. And it's up to you. You are going to be the next leaders. You are going those who going to decide what's good and what's bad. So it's important that we enable you. And how to do that in the best way, that's something we're still trying to figure out, how we can do that better. And again, please come to us. Tell us what we are doing wrong. It's the only way we can learn. Tell us what we are doing wrong. Don't be shy. It's important. I hope I answered your questions. Oh, I see a very well-known colleague.
Thank you. Merci. Je vais parler français puisque je suis francophone. Alors, je me nomme Olivier Kwami. Je viens du Togo. Et je suis membre du NPOC et du NCNJ depuis décembre 2012. Et actuellement, j'occupe le poste de Chair of Communication Committee au sein du NPOC. Alors, je viens renforcer un peu à mon chair pour insister sur le fait que dans la NCSJ, la Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group,
the Non-Commercial Stakeholder Group, we are two constituencies, NCOOC. NPOC is the last constituent that has been created at the NGSG, a member of the ICANN, because it was created in 2011. NPOC is, therefore, its third executive office, where Rudy is a president and who's going to be president soon. I would like to attract the attention of my colleagues and friends of Latin America, where we know that there are many NGOs, and the only constituent, the only organization within ICANN that can understand it better and where it can militate really is NPOC, because NPOC gathers precisely everything that uses .org, not as a domain name mainly, and all the civil society organizations organized in the NPOC. We find the users. In NCOOC, we find the end users, but the NPOC, it's the NGOs, the associations, the non-profit organizations. NPOC, it would be very happy to have more members in its session that is going to take place within 1 hour at most. So, you're going to listen to the story of NPOC, which started, in fact, with the Red Cross. Rudy will explain to you much more of this. And also, you must know that intellectual problems exist, and conflicts on the domain name. I heard a fellow talk about La Paz. If you had lapaz.com as domain name and any other wanted to have it, there would be a conflict. And if there is a conflict, you must be a part of a group, and you have to defend yourself. That's what I wanted to add. Thank you.
Yeah, I didn't see him because he was hidden behind others. Indeed, he is part of the NPOC. He is our communication committee chair. And as you see, we have members of your community sitting around our table. I see, Rafik, you have a comment or additional remarks.
Okay. Thanks, Rudy. Merci, Olivier. Just, je veux clarifier quelque chose. On a deux
I would like to clarify something. We have two constituencies. The two accept its organization, the members of the civil society, but NPOC, you accept only its organizations, while the NCUC is the association of individuals, physical persons, and entities. Individuals, then, you can be part, and you can be members of both groups. There is no problem. Just to clarify this, NCUC does not represent only the users. There are many organizations. It's important to clarify this because NPOC focuses on the operational part. So that's the difference between the two, just to clarify.
Rafik, yeah, indeed, we don't accept yet any individual member. We are a structure that is built around organizations, and you have to be an organization. We have some criteria so that we don't allow commercial structures entering into our system, because you know all that once a commercial body enters into a structure, they have the power and the money to raise voices that go above what we want to do. That's the reason why we are quite strict and only accept organizations.
Mi nombre es Adela Goberna.
Adela Goberna from Argentina. I think the clarification that Mr. Damar made about the differences between NCOC and NPOC. Anyway, I would like to know further about these differences, because although one is based on the operational part and the other, as you said, is based on human rights, the operational part touches on human rights. Without that operational part that finds its basis in the law, how it works, I cannot find a strict difference between NCOC and NPOC. I would like to ask Mr. Vasnik, what is the difference in tangible terms between one and the other? Thank you.
I will try to be brief, because otherwise it's going to take an hour. And I would like to invite you to come to our meeting so you would better understand, because it needs a lot of explanation. And as Rafik was saying, we are focusing first of all on organizations, NGOs. So, as I said earlier, human rights is important, of course. But when you look into what an NGO requires, it's different. And that's where we already are creating the difference, is the fact that we need to focus on that specific group. If we start focusing on everything else, we're not doing our job. And that's a bit the problem that we have seen. That's why we are created, because the attention on the issues, the typical NGO issues, was fading away because of all the other issues. We need to really focus on what's going on. And as I said, for instance, losing your domain name is losing a lot of value. And that's operations more. But we also need, once we discover why it is happening, we also have to work on the policy. It's not just operations in itself. It's also creating policy to avoid that you lose your domain name. We need to help you and to have procedures and policy in place that helps you maintaining your domain name without having to go to court, for instance. So our focus is essentially working on the issues that NGOs have. Human rights, we support that question anyway. But for us, it's not enough. It's helping NGOs. As I said also, NGOs for me and for us, they're going to be very important in the future. You see that more and more NGOs are popping up to help people. And I'm looking in the developing regions, for instance. Myself, I'm involved in many NGOs, and I'm involved in one in Liberia, where, as you know, or you don't know, I can tell you, women and young girls have been abused all the time. There is an organization that stepped up and said, stop it. That organization is called Action International Development. And I'm the European director for that organization to try to help that organization having funds, having the power to do and change things. Change the fact that young women and girls are still abused. You see? But how can I help them? Well, to give them presence in the internet, because then everybody can see it, what they are doing. And everybody can say, yes, indeed, this is not good. And that's how they get funding. So the key is presence in the web. And the presence in the web is through a domain name. That's the best place. Then you identify yourself as a unique entity. But if you have other questions, please come to our session. And you can call on my colleagues also. As Martin is from Argentina, he can speak your language. I can't yet. I will try. although we are the second time in Buenos Aires, I'm still not able to speak Spanish. So you see, I have to learn also a lot of things.
And we actually have time for one more question. So I just want to see the hands up to see if there was someone who hadn't been on mic yet, who still had a question that maybe wasn't on. Are you the only two hands I'm seeing? Hasma, let's go with you. And then Nadira and Eduardo, I'm trying to learn these names. if you follow Rudy over to the side, he'll answer your questions after. Hamza?
Hamza, I'm from Tunisia. I come from the Middle East, which is a vibrant region in terms of civil society activities. And I want to ask you about the decentralization role of the ICANN in the region. So we had in Tunisia the Middle Eastern Adjoining School of Internet Governance. But in Cairo, there is a DNS Entrepreneurship Center, which is doing a lot of great work. But I want to ask you about, is this center like explaining more the role of the NCUC, for example, and how like civil society can have like more inclusive role in the region from a your constituency perspective?
Yeah, of course. We cannot do it all. We need the help of all the organizations in the world that understand what the problem is. They have to help us. We cannot do it alone. And I think a lot of work has to be done outside these meetings. Don't forget that the most of the work we are doing is in between. That's where we have these working groups. That's one part of the work. But as you said, we want also to reach outside of the ICANN meetings, go out in the world, go to events, as I said. The program committee has the duty now to figure out what are events that are of high importance so that we can send somebody for our community to that event and reach out eventually to that organization to join us in helping doing the work.
You said that NGOs are not really that represented in those kind of meetings. But I think that the responsibility of ICANN constituency is to decentralize the model more. I think to go to the regions and the countries like Tunisia or North African or the Middle Eastern countries and to try to make or to teach civil society officials about the DNS industry and try to link them with the government officials and try to find common consensus. I think ICANN has a great responsibility here. I think it's...
Well, to be quite concrete, we have been sitting together with Baher, who is helping the vice presidents in the region of Middle East and North Africa. And we are going to sit together on Thursday to figure out what are the events where we need to be. So we are going to do that. But as we are only a small group of people, we welcome everybody of you that can help us doing this job.
Rudy, thank you so much, and I really appreciate you helping us out here and moving along. So, again, anyone that would like to talk to Rudy further this morning, just step to the side over there while Alyssa Cooper, who is the chair for the commercial and business users constituency, steps up. Rudy, you have sessions today.
Yeah, we start at 9:30, Retiro A. You're all welcome.
Thank you again.
Hello, my name is Alyssa Cooper, and so you've heard from the non-commercials, you heard from the nonprofits, and now you're going to hear from the profits. I'm from the business constituency, and I am part of the group that represents business users on the internet, and all kinds of business users can be very small companies, can be medium-sized companies. We have multinational organizations as well that participate in the business constituency. And our purpose is really threefold. As the business constituency, we are very interested in developing policy that does three things. One, we want to ensure that the internet is a safe place for businesses and their customers. Two, we want to make sure that there is a competitive supply of both registries and registrars so that businesses have the option of who to choose. And then three, and then very importantly, we want to ensure that the internet is a technically secure, stable, and resilient operation. So those are sort of the three different areas where we focus. And when we work on policy, we are driving policy that really supports those three different goals. Now, I guess I want to tell you a little bit about how I came to become involved at ICANN. And it's been a very long process for me. I'm not one of these people that's been at ICANN for years and years and years. Some people have been here almost since the very beginning, and I'm not one of those people. I came in about 5 or 6 years ago. My company had been involved with ICANN. Part of the business actually had a registrar, and so I had some colleagues that were going to these meetings, and I said, what is this all about? And then I had to start following ICANN because ICANN became very important to my company's clients. So I had to tell my company's clients what was going on at ICANN. I had to tell them what these new GTLDs were about. I had to tell them about all of these changes that were happening to domain name ownership records. So I started following ICANN kind of from outside. I was monitoring the websites and I was reading a lot online in terms of what was going on. And then at some point, I finally told my boss, I think I better go to one of these things because I seem to be acting like I'm going because I'm talking about it a lot, and I'm sure everybody thinks I'm there, but I wasn't. So I started going to the meetings, and I joined the business constituency. And then after a couple of years, I decided that I wanted to take a deeper role, and I actually became an officer in the business constituency. We have sort of an executive team within the business constituency that sort of organizes and helps to drive the group and act as a voice. So I became a member of the leadership team. And then about 3 years ago, I ran for the chair, and I've been the chair for the last 3 years. And this will be my last term as the chair because it's time for somebody else. You know, I think it's good to have people coming in and having the opportunity to take a leadership role. And so I'm excited for other people to also have the same opportunity. But I'll continue to be very involved and come to all the meetings and all that. I think what I want you to know about the business constituency or any constituency is that when you join a constituency, you are able to work with a group of like-minded people. There is a lot going on at ICANN, and ICANN can be a very confusing place. And I still learn something about ICANN, like, you know, all the time. I'm constantly learning something new. It has taken me, you know, 5 or 6 years to get what I think is a pretty good understanding of ICANN, but even still, I continue to learn. And with all of the acronyms, it can be a very confusing place. And I myself, I try not to use all the acronyms, and believe me, sometimes people use the acronyms and they themselves don't know what they mean. They just know that, well, that's what we call it. Everybody calls it that, but I have no idea what those three or four letters mean. But please do ask. People want you to know what's going on, and they'll obviously if you just say, well, what do those, you know, well, what is the PDP, you know, WG? Well, you know, that's a policy development process working group. You know, they want to tell you what that means if they know. And don't be afraid to ask. But what I wanted to say is when you're part of a constituency, that gives you an opportunity, again, to be with like-minded people, but also to take on the work as a team. And, you know, when you're in a constituency, some people are not very active and they just sort of monitor what's going on from afar. We do most of our communication via email distribution lists, so that's how we have most of our conversations and that's how we get a lot of our work done. We do meet every other week for an hour, but some people don't attend those meetings. Again, they're just you know, paying attention to the distribution list. But it's also an opportunity to hear what others think, to help synthesize all of the work that's going on. You know, ICANN does post all of the work that they create, gets posted to the ICANN website. So there's an opportunity, you know, to go out, read the reports, see where, you know, things stand in terms of policy that's being developed. There's always, you know, comment periods for anything that gets posted, but it can be overwhelming. And so when you're in a constituency, you can break up the work. And some people can focus on, you know, one set of comments in one particular area of interest, and others will focus on another. And so that's one of the great things about being in the constituency, any constituency, is that you're able to get a much better understanding. You have people that can help explain things to you, and you can also have that opportunity to sort of split the work up. Now, you don't have to be involved in a constituency at all to be part of the whole ICANN process. Again, the ICANN website is a great place to see what's going on and see what's being posted for public comment. And you as an individual are encouraged. You should read those. You should comment if you have comments. You know, the ICANN community is not just focused on, you know, specific constituencies. The idea is that everyone has a voice and you should participate and know what's going on. So I talked a lot. So let me stop and ask and take some questions. Yes.
Okay. I'm Alhaji Cisse from the Gambia. You did mention in the beginning that you work with the businesses to ensure and the internet is a safe place for both businesses and their customers. What approaches or strategies do you use? Who do you partner with in the ICANN community to ensure this security is given to them?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. So we pay very close attention to the SDAC, which is the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. And the role of the SAC is to look out and see what's going on from a technical perspective, and they will issue guidance, recommendations, their perspective on different security things that are going on or technical issues. So we pay close attention to those, and, you know, generally, we're always very supportive of whatever the ESSAC is saying. Now, just because the ESSAC has made a recommendation or given guidance, that doesn't mean that that guidance automatically is incorporated into whatever ICANN is doing. So it's important that folks pay attention to what they have to say and give their support when they feel that it is warranted.
Can I come again?
Yeah.
Do you work with government businesses as well?
No. So in terms of businesses, we do work with associations that represent businesses. So the Better Business, you know, somebody like the Better Business Bureau or other kinds of organizations that are representing businesses. But aside from that, our membership is really focused solely on businesses. So government associations would, you know, probably participate elsewhere.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
I'm Miguel Ignacio Estrada from Argentina. I wanted to know how much Latin America is involved in your group, in your constituency.
So we do have a couple of members. That is one of the things that the business constituency continues to struggle with in terms of outreach and getting greater participation from other regions of the world. So we do have a couple of members. Certainly, you know, Latin America is a huge burgeoning, you know, economy, and certainly one where we would like to have greater participation. We have some, but it could be much better. So if you have any interest, come see me. We do meet today. This is Constituency Day, which I'm sure you've probably heard from everyone. So we meet today at 1:15, let me tell you what room, because I'd like to invite you to come to our meeting. Our meeting is in Martin Fierro, which is upstairs. It starts at 1:15. It runs through 4:30. So if anybody has any interest in seeing what topics we talk about, please come see us. I saw another hand. Yes.
I'm John Foreman from Brazil. Usually smaller businesses have different needs than bigger businesses. Could you give us examples of this difference in the constituency?
Well, you know, there are a few topics which I think cut across businesses who are not in the business of domain name sorts of things. So we do have some businesses who are not sort of in the domain. We have some businesses who are sort of in the domain industry themselves. So they they buy domains, or there are people that, you know, amass large amounts of domains and they monetize those domains. So there's small businesses like that, but I kind of put them off. I don't consider them like your typical average small to medium business. So the things that, like, I think cut across both small to medium businesses, not domainers, but the other kinds, just regular businesses and large businesses. Like, for instance, we're very focused on open and accessible Whois information. You know, I think we think it's incredibly important to be able to get information about who owns and operates a website. And I think for large and small business alike, if somebody's infringing on your brand, or you've done business with somebody online and you're having a problem with that website, whatever you've ordered or whatever is not showing up or whatever the problem is, you need a way to understand who really, you know, owns that website. And the way that can be done is through, you know, domain name ownership information that's readily accessible. But certainly you're right. Like, the large multinationals have, you know, different concerns, different from small to medium business. But again, you have to remember our focus is also strictly on, you know, the DNS. It's on domain names and numbers. So, you know, another thing I think that small businesses, you know, struggle with regards to that is sort of even getting a domain name that they want, because, you know, there hasn't, you know, the .com space and many ccTLDs, there's just not an opportunity to get the name that you want. But again, actually, that's a problem that bigger businesses have as well. It's just they have deeper pockets and they can pay more for it to somebody else who already owns it. But you're right, there are different interests, and that's why it's important that we have, you know, all kinds of members. Yes.
So I, Kim Handy from Argentina, Ancona. So who is part of the constituency? Like, when it says commercial and business users, for example, would Coca-Cola be part? Or because they're interested in pushing the trademark domain thing? Or, like, would a fashion company be part? Like,
yeah.
Or just who?
Yeah, so anybody who, you know, the internet is an important part of their business, you know, they've got a website, they sell something transactionally, they promote themselves on the internet. Anybody for whom the internet is important to their business, which is just about all businesses today, that's who would be a member. Now, our members right now are, you know, there's a big focus on companies that are very, very focused on the internet. So our members are we do have members like Yahoo, Google, Facebook, eBay. But we do have members like Pfizer and I think General Electric. So, I mean, there are other kinds of businesses, and we're certainly looking for those other businesses. But the idea really is that if your business needs the internet to operate, then this is the place for you. And in terms of, like, who specifically, like, participates, sometimes it's the domain name like, we have some companies where it's, like, the domain name administrator, the person who's, like, really familiar with domain names and numbering, like, it will be that person. But a lot of these other companies have sort of policy people who are focused on internet policy issues, and so for other companies, it's that kind of a person. I'm not a policy person. I'm somebody who knows about domain names at my company. And so that I'm participating, but there's definitely lots of other people, a lot of people out of legal departments, and again, policy, but then some people that are actually focused on domain names too. See one back there?
Hola, soy
Agustina. Hello, I'm Agustina Calegari from Argentina. I'm going to speak Spanish. I would like to ask you, can you explain a bit further the position that you have regarding Whois, because although there's the issue of intellectual property and the right to privacy of those who register their domain, the right of those who register their domain name has to be guaranteed. What is your position in respect to that?
So we feel strongly that especially a business operating on the internet needs to provide accurate Whois information. I think if you're doing business, if you're transacting, even if you're providing certain kinds of information, that domain name ownership information must be accurate. If you're using a privacy service where, you know, you're paying somebody else to mask the domain name ownership information, and, you know, you have engaged in some fraud or you have infringed on somebody's intellectual property rights, there also needs to be a way that we can get that information revealed so that, again, either the business, you know, you know who you're dealing with, you can take some action. So that's sort of the perspective of the business constituency, that open, accessible domain name ownership information or who is ownership information must be available, and ICANN must support that. Oh,
thank you. Voy a hablar en español.
I'll speak Spanish. Adela Huerma from Argentina. I have a question. Accurate does not mean public, and there are ways to obtain that information, at least in Argentina, through judicial procedures. Once evident proof exists that intellectual property is being violated, those records can be obtained. Why, according to your constituency, should this mechanism be modified to make this public instead of making it accessible through other mechanisms? Thank you.
I guess one clarification. We are only talking about generic top-level domains. So, you know, whatever the CCTLDs do in terms of what their rules are or local laws are, certainly I can't, well, first of all, ICANN has no purview over CCTLDs, only over GTLDs. And then in terms of local law, you know, that's always respected. So, yeah. Yes.
Regarding the new GTLDs, did you have any participation on the definition of the price for the application?
No.
Because it's too high for developing countries and stuff.
No. We didn't have, I mean, the business constituency participated pretty heavily in providing our guidance on what we needed or wanted to have as part of the program. You know, we were very focused on rights protection mechanisms to protect brand owners and businesses. That was a big focus for us. We didn't get nearly what we had asked for. And in terms of the price, you know, the whole, I can just tell you that, you know, the price was based on what ICANN had spent in earlier rounds. That was kind of supposed to be a cost recovery model. So that, you know, that's what they spent. So there were other rounds of what they called sponsored TLDs, and basically that 185 was based on what they had spent in a sort of in delegating those others. So that's what they how they came up with that number. They did have a program where, you know, you could apply to be subsidized if you were, I think, coming from, I don't know what kind of, I don't remember exactly, but there was a possibility of being subsidized. There were very few that actually took that up. But no, we didn't have anything to do with the price.
Merci.
I would like to know the relationship between the commercial and business users constituency, the registries stakeholder group, or the registrar stakeholder group.
Okay, so the way that what they call the generic name supporting organization, that's the group that develops policy, the GNSO, generic name supporting organization. The way that is devised is it's a bicameral house. That means there's two sides to it. On the one side, you've got the contracted parties, and those are the registries and the registrars. They call them the contracted parties because those are the two parties that have contracts with ICANN, either to be a registry or a registrar. On the other side, you have the non-commercial stakeholders group, and that is divided into two different groups. I'm sorry, you have the non-contracted parties house on the other side. So contracted parties house and non-contracted parties house. On the non-contracted parties house, it's divided into the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group. On the commercial stakeholders group, and that's where I am, You've got the business constituency, the intellectual property constituency, and the ISPs. On the non-commercial stakeholders group, you've got the non-for-profits, who you just met with, and then earlier you also had the non-commercial users constituency, the NCUC. So it's very complicated. but basically what you need to know is there's sort of the groups that are the contracted parties and the non-contracted parties. And we don't, you know, this group over here, they want to sell more domain names, and they are here to participate to protect their interests as being a registry and a registrar. Very legitimate, you know, but, and they have their perspective. This group over here is not necessarily aligned. They have many different perspectives. So over here, you've got businesses, but you also have people who are very concerned about privacy. And so, you know, for instance, there was some questions over here about, like, well, you know, maybe whose information should be protected. Well, so there's a group over here that thinks, well, there should be a lot of protections for who is. At the same time, you know, again, on this side of the house, then you've also got business users who think, well, whose information should be, you know, readily available and accurate. So we don't always align on this side of the house, but they almost always align on this side of the house. So it makes for very interesting policy development process. Excellent question.
Hi, I'm Fabrício Pessoa from Brazil. So, we work with a lot with for cybercrime, phishing, and malware, for example. And when we talk about the whois thing, I could see it from the previous people that's talking about the previous constituencies. There doesn't seem to be a consensus about how to deal with that, right? And it's a very delicate topic because at the same time, for me, my personal view, I totally understand the thing about the freedom of expression, that there is a concern about that because we know that in the world we have different views, different governments that can use that information in different ways. And I think it's a matter of how the content is used and not if it's accessible or who should have access to that. But I also see that there are some things when we talk about cybercrime that are affected because of this delicate topic. So I'll give you an example. For example, if you talk about intellectual property, it's subjective, right? It's something that maybe you need some judicial way of getting the information because how can you, what is the limit of who it belongs to or not? So it's something that's subjective and it needs to be further discussed. But when you talk about phishing and malware, for example, it's someone that's hosting malware, some distributing malware in a website or hosting a phishing site, it's very kind of, it's very straightforward, right? There's no questions asked. You look at that and you see that it's a fraud. So is that something that you guys also talk about kind of differentiating way kinds of crime and how to access the information or how to deal with that depending on the kind of crime or that is committed or something like that?
So this is a very delicate topic because, you know, on the one hand, you'll hear over and over again that, you know, ICANN is not a regulator of content. We're not looking at content. We're focused on domain names and numbers. But yet, you're right, like, the ownership information is critical. And when you've got somebody with a malware on a website, like, it would be very important to be able to know, obviously, who's doing that. Of course, you'll never find, like, any of course, there will never be accurate information there, right? Like, of course not. But it is a very, it's a very interesting situation because ICANN really does not sort of have any oversight over, like, the content. But yet, in the most current version of the new GTLD registry agreement, there is a specification that requires, like, registries to be doing some analysis to identify whether or not there's any malware or phishing or other kinds of malicious behavior going on and to take some action. It's a very complicated topic. I don't really have a very good answer, but it's one that's certainly discussed all the time.
Alyssa, thank you so much. And we are out of time. So I just want to say once again, thank you so much for all this information. If you would like to join the business constituency today, you now have the time and the schedule. If I would please ask everyone to quickly clean around your place, bring your things with you out, and we are going to meet in the outer hall for just a moment. So if everyone would come with me and move out of the room, that would be awesome. Thank you.